Welcome once again to Mr. Jeffrey On's World History Podcast. We're on episode 5. Today we are going to discuss early societies in East Asia, which means we're really just going to talk about China. Japan and Korea will get their time later. If you would like to submit a question for the podcast, you may do so by calling the Google Voice number 321-804-APWH, like AP World History. The cool thing about that is your message will be heard on the show for the world to hear. The other way to submit questions is by email, and the email for the show is mrjeffreyon@gmail.com. Just include your question and first name in the email, and we'll take care of the rest. Fair warning, I am going to mispronounce every Chinese word included in this podcast. Most of these are words I have only read and never heard spoken out loud, at least not by somebody who I didn't teach the word to. I'm telling you this because I would actually appreciate it if we have any Chinese or Mandarin speakers who listen to this podcast, for you to call in on the Google Voice number and leave a message informing me of the correct pronunciation. That way we can all learn. Human beings first settled in East Asia around 200,000 years ago and first engaged in agriculture around 7,000 BCE with rice in the Yellow River or Huanghe River. Soon, Neolithic villages like Yangshao emerged and over time developed into one of the most sophisticated societies of the ancient and classical worlds, China. While very old and remarkably sophisticated in regards to culture, technology, and tradition, Chinese societies developed almost entirely in isolation and were cut off from the other societies we have discussed so far in the podcast. It wasn't until the classical period, in the age of the Han, that China joined the web of commerce and began trading with the Middle East and the Mediterranean world. Of course, that is something we will deal with much later. Today, we are talking about early Chinese history. Chinese history is generally divided into dynasties. The dynasties we will cover today are the Xia, the Shang, and the Zhou. We may even get a little into the Qin dynasty as well. As for the Xia, spelled X-I-A, I won't get into too many details about these guys because they may or may not have existed. If that seems confusing to you, just be sure to check out John Green's Crash Course video titled 2,000 Years of Chinese History on YouTube. I will not say with certainty, as John Green does, that the Xia did not exist because there was a time when historians believed the Shang were made up as well. And Shang, by the way, is S-H-A-N-G. That was until artifacts from the Shang were discovered. These particular artifacts were called oracle bones and were comprised of turtle shells or sometimes ox hip bones with writing on them, supposedly used to divine the future. Later on, evidence of bronze metallurgy, domestication of horses, elaborate imperial tombs, and written accounts about the Shang were also found. In fact, the monopolizing of bronze production for the making of weapons and the use of cavalry is likely what gave the Shang such a distinct advantage over regional rivals to establish a dynasty in the first place. Of course, we mentioned other dynasties at the beginning of this podcast, and that means the Shang did not last forever. Around 1122 BCE, they were taken over by the Zhou, spelled Z-H-O-U. The Zhou justify this takeover with something called the Mandate of Heaven. In their view, the Shang were corrupt and engaging in some severely immoral behavior, everything from deviancy to cannibalism. By the way, it should be noted that the only records we have of this come from the Zhou and may or may not be true. Certainly the Zhou had motive for making everything up to gain support and overthrowing the Shang. But nevertheless, the Zhou claimed that because of the behavior of the Shang rulers, the Shang lost the Mandate of Heaven. In simple terms, the Mandate of Heaven is the means by which every Chinese dynasty, from the Zhou onward, explain why they are the ones who get to be in charge. The emperors are essentially saying, "We are in charge because heaven favors us." Interestingly enough, the Mandate of Heaven is about as religious as Chinese governments seem to get. Ancient China is the least religious of the ancient cultures we are looking at. It is relatively secular, finding unity through things like writing and a tradition of learning, rather than a common faith. So the Zhou invent the Mandate of Heaven to justify their overthrow of the Shang. and it is with the replacement of the Shang by the Zhou that the dynastic cycle is introduced. It goes something like this. In part 1, a new dynasty is established by a powerful leader. In part 2, a period of peace and prosperity follows. Infrastructure such as roads and irrigation systems are built, and everyday life for the common person improves. Part 3 is marked by a period of decline. Taxes increase while social services actually decrease. This often corresponds with natural disasters, such as floods or droughts, and is often accompanied by economic hardships. In part 4, the ruling family loses the mandate of heaven. In part 5, there is rebellion and often pressures from outside invaders. And in part 6, the dynasty is overthrown and the cycle repeats. There are plenty of visual aids out there that illustrate this if you would like to do a Google image search for the dynastic cycle, and they may actually be more helpful for understanding this than having me list the parts. The other major contribution of the Zhou was the introduction of iron metallurgy, which is, of course, much harder and holds a better edge than bronze, which makes it more valuable for tools and for weapons. At first, the Zhou tried to monopolize the production of iron, believing that if the technology fell into the hands of dissidents, it could spell disaster for the empire. In the end, the Zhou were unsuccessful in controlling the production of iron, and internal instability ultimately brought the Zhou down. The legacy they would leave behind includes the Mandate of Heaven and the Tradition of Learning. The literary works of the Zhou era would serve as the foundation of Chinese education centuries after the dynasty collapsed. The waning last days of the Zhou dynasty and its immediate aftermath is known as the Period of Warring States, or sometimes the Warring States Period. Warlords from different regions fought for control over territory to establish their own dynasty. This time is very significant because it is when the three major Chinese philosophies are introduced: Confucianism, Taoism, and Legalism. I'll give a brief summary of each of these, but you may want to read about them to gain a deeper understanding. Confucianism begins with Confucius, or Confuzi, as he is called. Confuzi was a scholar during the Warring States period. Like many smart people who live in violent, uncertain times, he thought a lot about how to bring about peace and stability, and concluded that societal harmony is brought about by the proper ordering of relationships. If everyone knew how they were supposed to behave in any given role, the expectation is they would behave properly in order to preserve social harmony. Confuzi believed there were five principal relationships. Relationship 1, ruler and subject. Relationship 2, father and son. Relationship 3, elder brother and younger brother. Relationship 4, husband and wife. And relationship 5, friend and friend. Every relationship except the fifth one, friend and friend, is a hierarchical relationship where the first person has authority over the second. It is the responsibility of the subordinate to respect and obey the authority of the superior, but it is also the responsibility of the superior to behave in a manner that is worthy of respect. That is not to say that if a superior does not fulfill his role properly, that a subordinate can disobey him. That would just mean that neither individual is abiding by the expectations of his or her station. The subject must obey the ruler. The son must obey the father. The younger brother must obey the older brother. And the wife must obey the husband. You will notice in these relationships that older people have authority over younger people, and men have authority over women. Chinese society was patriarchal, and Confucianism reinforced patriarchal authority. Center to Confucian philosophy is something called filial piety, which is the reverence for one's parents, elders, and ancestors. To put this in the simplest terms, dad is always in charge. The father slash husband is the head of the house. The oldest male is the head of the family, so grandpa or a great uncle. And the emperor is the father figure to all of China. With Confucianism, with filial piety, dad is always in charge. Confucianism is very structured, and there are a lot of rules. Almost the opposite of this is Taoism. Taoism begins with a man named Lao Tzu, who was also around during the Warring States period and wrote a book titled The Tao Te Ching, a collection of poems about the Tao. Tao simply means way, with a capital W. According to Taoists, this way is more than just a way to do something. It is the way of nature. It is in the blowing of the wind, the crashing of the waves, and the growing of a tree. A unifying force that connects all things. The Tao Te Ching can be confusing to some due to its writing seemingly to contradict itself, at least from the point of view of Westerners, but Taoists do not see opposites the way many of us do, but rather as two halves of a whole. Light cannot exist without dark, male cannot exist without female, etc. The end goal of Taoism is similar to Confucianism in that it seeks harmony, but attempts to achieve it through different means. Taoists tend to not be fans of too much structure and rules, but that is not to say there were no rules as far as how to behave. It's just that Taoists are supposed to behave in ways that will not disrupt the natural order. They tend to speak softly and only as loud as what is necessary, and they move when it is necessary to move, but are still if movement is not required. Generally, a Taoist is going to avoid bringing attention to his or herself. There has never been a dynasty who attempted to rule through Taoist principles. Lao Tzu believed in something called Wu Wei, action without action, and taught that the best ruler rules without ruling. An emperor cannot force his people to prosper any more than a farmer can force a seed to grow. Not exactly something that an individual who just finished vanquishing his enemies and is establishing his family's authority to rule, it's not something they're going to embrace. The third philosophy is legalism and begins with a man named Han Fei. Han Fei was actually educated in the Confucian tradition, but did not believe that proper behavior alone would bring peace. Instead, Han Fei believed that proper behavior had to be reinforced by those who were in charge, through strict laws and harsh punishments. At its root, legalism is far less optimistic than Taoism or Confucianism. Confucian scholars believed if people were aware of how they were supposed to behave, societal pressures would make them act in a manner that promotes social harmony. Taoists believe that people are, for the most part, good and only cause disharmony when they act against their nature. Legalists believe that people are naturally evil and selfish. Specific laws with clear punishments would train people to accept the emperor's authority, and that rulers should never give in to feelings of compassion. Furthermore, according to Han Fei, a ruler should never trust anyone, including, or perhaps even especially, his own family. As Han Fei wrote, "He who trusts others will be controlled by others." In the end, legalism would be the philosophy to end the uncertainty of the Warring States period, wielded by the man credited with being the first to unite all of China, Qin Shi Huang Di. How influential was the first and only Qin emperor? Well, China is named after him, but we will leave his story for another episode.
Well, that is all for me today, so I'll see you next week. This has been Mr. Jeffrey on Swirled History Podcast.